Today's program is brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
I'm Linda Palaccio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hi, and welcome to Taste Talks on Heritage Radio. I'm your host, Sarah Zorn, the food editor at Northside Media, which produces the annual Taste Talks Festival in both Brooklyn and Chicago each fall. Picking up where the festival left off, the Taste Talks podcast brings innovators from various fields, including music, art, media, design, and tech, together with luminaries from the food and restaurant world to expound on any and all topics related to taste. During today's show, I'll be chatting with Kayla Merkel, the co-founder of Maple, one of the leaders in the new and improved food delivery space, along with Soa Davies, Maple's executive chef. This isn't seamless, people, who is also the founder of Salt Hospitality, which provides creative direction and advisory services to hotels, restaurants, and bars. At the end of today's half hour, we'll indulge our inner hermits by talking about our go-to order-in meals. But first, I'll be joined in the studio by Jacqueline Raposo to meditate on the week's breaking culinary news. Welcome back, Jacqueline.
Thanks for having me back, Sarah.
So, tying in beautifully with today's show, which essentially explores the revolution and evolution, as it were, of the food takeout and delivery world, is New York City's newly enacted styrofoam ban, which went into effect on July 1st. So essentially, the policy does away with everything from single serving foam cups to beach coolers to packaging peanuts to, of course, takeout containers. But what exactly does Mayor de Blasio's ban mean for restaurants and, most importantly, their bottom line?
I think it's more even than restaurants, more street food that is going to be threatened.
Sure.
Because they have, you know, such a lower price point to begin with. That, and they're the ones that every street vendor that you're going to get, like halal or, you know, pita or whatever from, is going to use a styrofoam container. So then their costs are going to go up. But hopefully, since restaurants are sort of already leaning towards recyclable cardboard and compostable items, hopefully, as the demand goes up, I think the price is going to drop. I think the past couple of years, several chefs that I sort of looked into had already said that the prices are dropping, and that the bottom line, like, is that as important as creating a sustainable food community in one of the largest cities, you know, in the world? This is the largest city that's doing the ban, which I think is really awesome. But we got rid of like 30,000 tons of foam products last year. Like, that's a lot of foam going into our waterways and into our ground.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and there also is, speaking of, you know, the street food vendors, there is a hardship exemption for businesses that make less than $500,000 a year in revenue.
Exactly.
A 6-month grace period.
Right.
So, well, maybe our friends from Maple will add their thoughts here. Obviously, they do not use styrofoam, but are you guys up on this current ban? How do you feel about that?
We don't use styrofoam, like you said, so it's something that we sort of planned for as we went into this. We actually looked at over 200 different types of packaging as we were thinking about what made the most sense to use for Maple, and sustainability was a big part of that. So it wasn't really something that was on our radar in terms of a consideration, but it is a trade-off. It's a really hard trade-off, because when you're thinking of delivery, a big part of it is actual performance, and the things that are best for the environment don't necessarily make the most sense in terms of performance.
Sure. I know it also came as a blow to a lot of Brooklyn bars, which were kind of known for serving their gigantic margaritas in oversized styrofoam cups. So if you could get past, you know, your feelings about that and switch to plastic or recyclable materials. Sorry to the patrons of Turkey's Nest, though. They have switched over from styrofoam. But also of interest, considering today's food delivery app theme, is a recently launched company called Fuji, which allows customers to tweet an emoji of whatever food they're craving, be it pizza or burgers or ramen or tacos, and get said foodstuff delivered directly to their door for the not necessarily low price of $15. Especially if you're talking about like getting an ice cream cone, which I think is an option. So basically, they are addressing the supposed problem of having too many options at your disposal by basically giving you 0.0 options at all. So again, I'm going to throw this to Jacqueline as well as our esteemed guest. What is your take on Fuji? Is this a mere novelty, or is this the future of food delivery?
I don't know. I guess if you're going to use the app as a, like, for the excitement factor and the whole, like, oh, where's my burger going to come from today? Where is my pizza going to come from? I'll discover someplace new. If it's because you're, you know, you want something new and exciting, then great. If it's because, like, you can't take the 5 minutes to go on Seamless, which does everything so easily for you, to pick where you're going to get your burger from and put in your preference of pickles or no pickles or whatever. I don't know. Like, are we that lazy?
I think...
Are we really?
Fuji may make that plan whether we are, in fact,
I think maybe it's a younger person's game. I think I'm just not their target audience, personally.
I don't use emojis in my day-to-day life, certainly not to express what I'm hungry for. Caleb, Soa, do you feel the threat and pressure of Fuji nipping at your heels?
You know, I mean, I'm completely in the other camp. Like, I feel like
he's going to become a Fuji regular.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but it's like the number of times I've wanted to order, but I've been stopped by having to either type more than a single, you know, emoji or have to do anything more than that has been pretty overwhelming for me. So I feel like this is not only the future of food, but probably the future of everything.
I guess it probably also depends on where you live. I live in Washington Heights with very limited options, so I know if I want pad thai, I know very quickly the best pad thai place or the best lamb burger. You know, it's like my options are limited. It's not like I'm like, oh, there's so many places that I can get this dish. Which one do I want?
Well, you know, And all I could say is anyone with food restrictions, beware, because in stark contrast to basically the rest of the restaurant industry, Fuji could not care less about your gluten intolerance or your peanut allergy.
Again, which is why I'm not their target audience as well.
You are listening to Taste Talks on the Heritage Radio Network.
The following program was brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Edwards Suriano hams are aged to perfection for no less than 400 days and hickory smoked to achieve a deep mahogany color. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. Their exclusive curing and aging recipe produces a unique flavor profile that enhances the quality characteristics of Berkshire pork. Optimum amounts of pure white fat marbling contribute to a flavor that's a delicate, perfect balance between sweet and salty. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
Delivered meals, according to the Restaurant Marketing and Delivery Association, account for a sizable 7% share of American food spending, with 26% of consumers ordering takeout at least once a week, which is why, in just the last year or so, highly innovative young companies have flooded the once stagnant space, hoping to push the boundaries of food delivery well beyond cheap and greasy pepperoni pizza and chicken chow fun. And chief amongst them is Maple, partially financed by none other than Momofuku's David Chang, which is why I am very excited to speak to Maple's enterprising co-founder and CEO, Caleb Merkel, today, as well as its executive chef, Soa Davies, formerly the head of menu research and development at La Bernardin. Hi, guys. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
So, Caleb, as a Harvard Business School alum with a professional background in marketing strategy, competitive analysis, and business development, you've definitely got your finger on the pulse of what's new and what's next. So what inspired you to join the brave new world of food delivery?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I got any of that at Harvard Business School, but I appreciate you just giving me the credit blindly. You know, I think for us, it was really just about basic pain points. So, you know, we looked at a lot of, I think we set out to sort of purpose build a company that we felt would make delivery exceptional at every sort of point in the process. And for us, that meant owning everything from sourcing ingredients to building our own technology to actually owning the last piece, the last mile delivery. And I think the impetus for that came from just frustration around what we had seen with sort of traditional delivery. So for me, and I'm sure you guys have all had similar experiences, I would get online, I'd sort of have an overwhelming number of choices.
You should be an investor in Fuji, by the way. I need to say.
So I was joking a little bit about the need to sort of order via emoji, but I am a strong supporter of emoticons, so that was really what it was more about. But so it was about those basic pain points of sort of like overwhelming number of choices, generally a really unreliable delivery experience, not a great checkout experience. And then food that came that really didn't seem like it was really meant or built for delivery, all at sort of a bloated price. So, you know, for Maple, we're trying to basically address all of those head on.
So Seamless, I should say the Seamless Grubhub conglomerate, they've been a mainstay, both of them and also together, for years now. But the food delivery space has exploded with innovation recently. There's you, of course. There's Caviar, of course, Fuji. They should pay us for all this lip service during today's show.
You really are saying Fuji quite
Fuji,
a lot.
Fuji,
quite a
it's
lot.
Fun, Fuji. It's fun to say. Probably funner to say than it is to do. So why do you think that is? Why is this a hotbed of innovation?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a couple things. I think that, you know, first, it's not just food. So you're seeing this happen across all sorts of different industries. So everything from eyeglasses to mattresses to financial services to real estate services. And I think it's really just about sort of technology becoming really, really cheap, and things like smartphones and the internet, the level of penetration around those two things basically hitting sort of 100%.
Well, Soa, I'm really interested to hear what brought you to Maple, because your career has been very much focused in fine dining. Obviously, you spent years doing menu development and market research for none other than La Bernardin. You produced and styled Eric Rippert's award-winning TV show, his accompanying cookbook. So that is to say, a takeout friendly restaurant concept seems like an unlikely move for you. What made you decide to join the Maple fold?
It was David Chang. Like, quite frankly, it was all David's fault.
All so roads I'm blaming, lead to yes, David Chang.
I'm totally putting the blame square on his shoulders. No, to be honest, at first when they spoke to me about this idea, I was like, I have no idea what you're talking about. You guys are crazy. But then the more I started thinking about it, and what Caleb says is very true, is technology is starting to touch more and more of our lives and making things much easier and making things more feasible for the busy entrepreneurial or just the busy professional. And even if you're a stay-at-home mom trying to run after two kids, like, you don't have, even if you want to, you don't always have the time to cook. And so it's not easy to get a very well-cooked, well-sourced meal delivered. And I started thinking about that, and I started thinking about the reach we could have with a company like Maple, not just for the people who are ordering the food, but also the people who are producing the food and the farmers and how we decide to source. And so those things all started to really, really excite me as far as like building a food culture.
So can you take us through how Maple works? Because as opposed to most of the other companies, which essentially serve as conduits between restaurants and the consumer, like Seamless et al., Maple is essentially a restaurant unto itself. So how does it differ from all these other organizations, companies, businesses on the market right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you kind of hit the nail on the head right there, which is that, you know, most organizations, when you think of food delivery, are taking a piece of the process. So there's a bunch of companies out there who are saying, hey, I'm going to aggregate demand a la Seamless, and I'm going to, you know, point that demand towards a bunch of restaurants. There are a bunch of companies out there who are saying, I'm going to figure out how to deliver food really well, and we're basically going through and saying, you know, kind of how I started, that we really have to own every part of that process if we're actually going to deliver on the idea of making every part of that process good.
And then the fact that they went after someone like me with my background in fine dining as their food person makes a big impact, like, for the food culture and what they're trying to build. So they were very serious about the type of food they want to be serving from the get-go, and I think that's the big difference. Is we started out this company from the mentality that we want to serve great food. And hopefully that's, like, every step of the way, that's what we're trying to accomplish.
And obviously the process is super duper streamlined, and it goes a little beyond just tweeting an emoji. But so I'm a customer. I sign on. I download your app, or I sign on to the website. Can you take me through the process of what I can expect and how I'm ordering from you and how it's getting to me?
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, like we said, one of the things we wanted to address was sort of overwhelming choice. So I think we're trying to nail this sort of category of well-balanced, well-sourced meals. And you basically would log into the app and be served up sort of three options for a day. So our menu is three options for lunch, three options for dinner. Those options change daily. It's a flat price point for lunch at $12, which includes tax, tip, and delivery, and $15 for dinner, tax, tip, and delivery included. And the idea is sort of that you can come in, and if we can sort of get you to trust that, one, our food's going to be of a certain quality, and two, the experience and the reliability is going to be at a certain level, that you start to be able to go in there and look pretty quick and say, hey, this is, you know, this is what I'm in the mood for tonight, and you know, can learn a little bit more about the ingredients that are in a dish. You can learn a little bit more about the inspiration that sort of was going on in Scylla's head as she sort of developed the dish. And then it's really just a couple clicks. You know, we've saved your credit card information, your favorite, your work address, your home address. So it's a couple clicks and you're sort of out the door. And then your food's to you in 30 minutes or less.
So I don't remember if this was a quote from David, directly David Chang, or from you, but I remember reading one of you saying that while the food delivery space has changed, the restaurant experience has not, and that as well is something that you were seeking to address. I'm sure this falls largely on your shoulders, Soa, how you're interpreting this, but how are you translating meals that generally would be served on a plate to meals that really hold up in however long it takes them to get from your test kitchen to somebody's home or office?
Well, as David stated, I think the next step for restaurants is delivery and the fact that we want to be able to bring that farm-to-table experience home. And as much as New York is a restaurant culture, I think we all want to eat better at home. And so we wanted to say everyone should have access to farm fresh food and to organic ingredients and no hormones and antibiotic free meats. So when we started talking about the actual menu and what we wanted to put on it, we were very, very clear about the things that we wanted to do and the things we didn't want it to do. And then once we got into the kitchen, we were just like, oh, this is a lot harder than it actually is. So it kind of started on square one. Like at first we were just making things in my home kitchen and trying to put it in a box and delivering to the office and seeing, oh, did it travel? How did it do? How does it taste? But trying to scale that up to doing it multiple times a day, plus having it go over cobblestone streets with a bicycle and rattling the entire time, we've discovered very quickly, oh, these salad greens don't work because they're going to be flat by the time they get delivered. Or we can't do sauces or soups very efficiently right now until we find the right packaging. And packaging is a huge part of what we've been able to develop and how creative we can be around the packaging solutions that we have found. It's great what we have and it's compostable, but there are absolute limitations on what we can do to put in that box to make sure it gets to you the right way.
And what have you found through, I'm sure, tons of trial and error really, really works?
Things that work, well, it's different, and it's different per, like, meal service, to be honest. At dinner, things are a little slower paced, so we can do more innovative things, and we can add the sauce, and it's not as bad. But for lunch, we've discovered like things get ordered so quickly and there's such a high volume. We're like, okay, we can't use wet ingredients too much because by the time the clients eat or they open the box, it gets delivered. Everything wet has gotten over everything. So we're trying to make everything neater, trying to make everything drier, and then also packing in as much flavor and spice as opposed to sauce. So we're trying to, as Caleb said, trying to put out a well-balanced or, like, not, we don't want to beat the healthy drum. We absolutely think that fat is flavor, and I love bacon. But we do want to be able to provide a well-balanced, healthy option for everyone. So we want to provide a lot of flavor, and we want to provide a lot of, like, bang for your bite, but not add a lot of
Is that trademarked? Bang for your buck?
Bang. You just heard it here. Yeah. Absolutely.
All right.
So we're starting to develop things where we're using a lot of spices from a local spice guy called Lior at La Boite, and working with him to add more flavor to our food as opposed to adding just fat and more sauce. So things like that is what's really keeping us on our toes and trying to pack as much flavor into every bite as opposed to like just adding more sauce or adding different things that are going to mask the food.
It's also ultimately a couple. It's not any one thing that makes delivering food. It's the whole process. And so it comes down to packaging. It comes down to the menu development. It comes down to the fact that, you know, ultimately what we're trying to do is minimize the time from when it leaves our oven to when it hits someone's door. And so that actually has to do with everything from routing technology that we're building, which is nice and flashy and sexy, to just the fact that we're building out infrastructure the way any traditional restaurant would. We're just purpose building that infrastructure to sort of serve this one very specific need.
Well, even so, something so simple as like spinach, we've discovered certain ways of cooking spinach will work, but certain ways absolutely will not work because of the steam factor of if we're going to deliver it cold, then yes, it works. If it's going to be hot, the steam just kind of overcooks the spinach. So it hasn't been a successful thing for us. So it's going back to like the nexus of how we want the end result and then trying to engineer backwards from that is what we've started doing and starting to become more successful at delivering the right quality.
So we had mentioned that, you know, David Chang is part of the Maple concept. His official title is Chief Culinary Officer. And unless you tell me otherwise, I'm going to assume that this is more than a pretty title that is thrown out for PR purposes. So can you talk about how he came to be involved in Maple and what his role actually entails?
Yeah, absolutely. So David got involved before we even had a name. So it was myself and my co-founder, Akshay, and Thrive Capital, who's one of our early investors. And they actually had an introduction to him. And, you know, we went in and met with him and didn't really know what to expect. And it just happened to be that he was thinking a lot about sort of food outside of the restaurant. And so, you know, he pretty much said in that meeting, like, this is awesome. Let's do this. Why are we still talking about this? Let's do this now, which wasn't exactly what we were expecting, but was obviously exciting. And I was like, that's great, David, like shut down all your restaurants. Like, let's do this. Come on board. And you know, so we had to sort of adjust that strategy, but he, you know, immediately got involved, you know, actually helped us. He was the person who basically got so involved as so described. And since then has just been really incredible. I think whenever you get someone like David involved in something who has so much on their plate already, there is sort of a spectrum in your mind of, you know, what you just noted, sort of like they could be over here on the sort of, hey, I'm basically a face in PR, all the way to, you know, someone who's like David sort of, you know, calling me from Australia and Skyping into meetings from, you know, from Canada. So he wherever he is in the country.
Or Denmark.
Yeah, there was Denmark too. So I think that, you know, he does so much that one of the things that's exciting for him is to see a team that is really just going after one thing and to be able to come in and be part of that and still go back to Momofuku, which obviously has everything from sort of Sam sauce, you know, consumer packaged good to all their different restaurant concepts.
Well, maybe he did. He come up with Fuku because of your very streamlined concept, serving just a chicken sandwich.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think he's again, he's been thinking about food in different ways for a long. He's always thinking about this. I mean, I think if you talk to David about what's going on in his mind, he actually has about 350 different concepts right now. And so it's really an exercise of what he wants to zero in on.
And so what about this super badass board of culinary, the culinary board of directors? It includes Del Posto's Brooks Headley and Mark Ladner. So how do they contribute to the concept?
Yeah, Dan Kluger as well.
Right, yes.
From ABC Kitchen, or formerly of ABC Kitchen. You know, I think as Scylla sort of said, same reason that we got her involved. Myself, my co-founder Akshay, you know, Dan, who runs technology for us, and a lot of the other people on the team don't come from a culinary background where we've spent enormous amounts of time in the kitchen. We've been thinking about food as sort of a business, and so it was really important for us to involve people like Mark and like Brooks and like Dan, who would just, and like Soa, who would just sort of keep the bar high. We felt very strongly that this is a business where there's a whole bunch of flashy, exciting things you can do around having a cool app and technology and that sort of stuff. But in the end, it's about the food. And if the food's not good, you know, nothing else is really going to matter. So getting, you know, we're excited. I think down the road, we're probably going to do something a little bit more visible with some of these guys on the culinary board. We're still, as Soa described, kind of refining our own process and making sure that our own product is where we want it to be. But really excited to collaborate with these guys down the road. And I think just having them involved is about us mentally not being able to sort of be let off the hook from a
culinary standpoint. Also, it's a privilege for me and for our kitchen team to be with those kind of luminaries in the culinary world and to have access to them and go to them if we have a question about gluten-free pasta and what's the best way to cook it, and we can go straight to Del Posto's, like, brilliant genius, and the fact that they serve gluten-free pasta for almost every course is just amazing to me.
Yeah, you must have some mean gluten-free pasta. Fuji can't hold a candle, not to mention them again.
Exactly.
And your veggie burgers, so maybe, if you make them.
Exactly, and veggie burgers. And Brooks obviously just opened Superiority Burger. So we want to, the fact that we have access to those types of minds is very, very, like, we feel very lucky.
So you've all indicated that your overarching aim isn't to one-up your average local Chinese restaurant, but to be really competitive alongside big businesses like Chipotle. So what inspires you about the Chipotle model, and what do you think it will take to get Maple up to that level?
I think Chipotle is more just used as a reference point in that they, in the fast casual space, are sort of a well-oiled machine. So I guess that's maybe what inspires us about what they do, is that they're sort of best in class from an operational standpoint. But I don't think our goal is necessarily sort of relative to Chipotle. It's really just, how do we build a food brand that people really love and people turn to, you know, on a daily basis, which would be really incredible to see people using Maple on a daily basis. And it's actually something we see now. But that's sort of the aim in our mind, is how do you build a food brand that people really love and people really trust?
Currently, you only serve the financial district in New York City, even though your primary kitchen is in Williamsburg-ish at the Pfizer building. So why did you settle on FIDE, and what are your short and long-term expansion plans?
Yeah, FIDE, we just thought was a really interesting cross-section of really dense residential, of really dense commercial, of commuters and non-commuters. So it's just an interesting place for us to use as a testing ground, so that when we think of, hey, we're going to go to the East Village, you know, we can kind of cut the information that we're getting and cut that data up and say, here's what's relevant from FIDE that looks like the East Village, and let's use those learnings in the East Village. And if we go to Midtown, we can kind of say, you know, here's what's similar to Midtown. And so it kind of represents a little bit of everything in New York. So that was sort of why we started there.
I was just going to say, I would like to take the opportunity to push southernmost Brooklyn as a future Maple hub. I will just say, we need you desperately out there.
Yeah, listen, we're really excited to come to Brooklyn. So.
Thanks so much, guys, for chatting with me. And please do stick around for our next segment. You are listening to Taste Talks on the Heritage Radio Network. there were a slew of articles that went out not too long ago discussing how much of their income New Yorkers tend to blow on takeout, and the numbers were staggering. We're talking up to $1,800 per month. So considering today's guests, I thought we would talk about what we find ourselves splurging on, from pizza to tacos to pad thai, when we can't quite bring ourselves to lose the sweatpants and tear ourselves away from the comfortable confines of our couch. Guys, what do you eat when you're at home and tucked away from the world?
I'm always tucked away from home.
Since I write from home, I work from home.
Hello, girl. So, tell me about it.
Yeah, so I'm a big lunchtime
I actually put on
order.
Pants to record this really? Show.
Yeah, I don't put on pants for anything.
She's pantsless, everyone. Pantsless, you wish this
right
was
now.
TV.
Yeah. And in my neighborhood, I'm like the border of Washington Heights and Harlem, so it's basic stuff. It's, you know, I've got my Thai place, which is Rain 2, which has a decent pad thai. I've got Heights Tavern, which there's also Harlem Tavern. They're the same people. It makes a really good lamb burger that's got mint and goat cheese on it and sweet potato fries that are totally cool. I can get Dinosaur Barbecue, which is on 125th. I'm on 157th, so that's sort of the most upscale thing I can get in my neighborhood, but... Yeah, I don't want to think about how much money I spend on delivery food.
Caleb and Soa, you probably have, you know, unlimited access to wonderful maple food. But when you're not eating maple, what do you eat when you're at home?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty much always eating maple. So I think Soa maybe is a little bit more adventurous. But and if I was going to go out, I would pretty much probably follow Soa's direction.
I probably only... I order from like two other places other than Maple. One is a Japanese restaurant called Nagomi in Soho, and they're really pricey when they deliver. And it's typically because I'm feeling sick and I want miso soup. And the other place is Vietnamese restaurant in Chinatown, and it's only if I'm feeling like I want really gross, fatty Chinese food.
Don't you always?
Yeah, when is that not? When do you not feel that way?
Well, this is why I'm begging Maple to come to me. In a way, it's good because I do not spend anywhere near $1,800 on takeout. But being very, very, very out of anybody's delivery zone in southernmost Brooklyn. Okay, so I live in the sort of border between Bensonhurst, Gravesend. It's technically called Bath Beach. Nobody knows what I'm talking about. But basically, it's a very old school Italian neighborhood turning into a very new school Chinese one. Love both cuisines, but the old school Chinese restaurants won't deliver to you unless you make friends with them, which I have managed to make friends with some of them, so they take pity on me. And the newer school Chinese ones... You know, when they hear my voice on the phone, they tend to have, you know, the menu, the real one, and then the Americanized menu. And the second they hear my voice, no matter what I order, I'm convinced I just get switched right over to the Americanized menu. So I kind of have to go in person and make sure I'm getting what I order, or else I get chicken and broccoli. So please come to me, guys.
That sounds pretty rough.
Uptown, too.
So, guys, that is our show for today. If you're lucky enough to live within Maple's delivery zone and are itching for takeout that's truly a cut above, go on and visit maple.com or download their Apple or Android app. You could learn more about Soa and what she does through her incredible company, Salt Hospitality, at salthospitality.com, or you could check out my banter buddy, Jacqueline Raposo, at her website, wordsfoodart.com. As always, you could follow me at Sarah Zorn BK or Taste Talks at Taste Talks, and be sure to subscribe to our show feed on iTunes or Stitcher. Until next time, you've been listening to Taste Talks on the Heritage Radio Network.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.